Toby.
Hey, sir, how are you? Good
I'm fine, how are you?
in Australia, mate.
Good to speak to you.
Indeed. How much work did this latest album take given the pandemic? I imagine it would have been pretty full on.
That's difficult to say because I never perceive it as work. That's also the dangerous thing when you do a lot of stuff that you love and you never perceive it as work. There's always the risk of overpacing. But I had a lot of time during the pandemic, and therefore it was a quite stressless working process, I have to say. In the beginning, it was a bit strange. I had just built a new studio before the pandemic came, and that it went into the start of the pandemic, the construction period of the studio. And once I was finished and with a building of the studio, I thought, okay, what have I done this for? Because nobody knew there would be a music business left after what we were going through. But it turned out to be a blessing because it is a very cozy working retreat, and it was giving me calm and basically the option to work whenever I wanted to work in a very, very nice and very, very high quality environment. And that made me reconnect to the purity of making music, if I want to say it in a pathetic way or in an emotional way, because there was nothing else to do. There was a pandemic, we were in lockdown, and I would go into my basement and work on a demo. And as there was nothing else to do, I was getting immersed in it and involved in a lot of the tiny little details that in previous or in earlier days I would have devolved onto others. And that's something, in hindsight, I think it was a very, very relaxing and easy working process, I would say.
Okay. And do you think that these processes are now going to be in place for the next album?
I have no idea. I mean, I have a lot of songs written already. So yes, some of the process will have an effect on the next album because some of the stuff is prepared. Not finished. Some of it is already not mixed, but some stuff has been done already. I don't think about the next album currently, I have to say. So I don't know. I always want to be excited about what I do, and therefore I always want to be surprised. And maybe I'm gonna do something completely different, or maybe I'm going to continue on with that working process. It seemed very relaxing and very good, but I have no idea what the future holds, I have to say. I'm always open for change, but I'm not afraid of repeating something that I enjoyed, and therefore I have no idea.
Okay. Speaking of change, it was nice of Primal Fear to put a song on your album. It
Excuse me, what?
was nice of Primal Fear to put a song on your album.
You think it sounds like Primal Fear?
Oh, just a bit.
Well, it's probably because of the singer sounds quite similar. Ralph did a great job, and of course, when you have such a distinctive voice like Ralph, it leaves its mark on whatever you do. And of course, Ralph's voice is a big part of the sound of Primal Fear. And of course, him singing that song, I get what you mean. But I think the song is rather, I think it bears my handwriting a lot. And I think it's also, it could be early Judas Priest or Painkiller Judas Priest. It could also be, I can hear some early Edguy in there as well, Hellfire Club Edguy. I don't know, it's got my DNA, but of course, I think Primal Fear, they are heavily influenced by Judas Priest during the Painkiller era, and therefore, I get where you're coming from.
No, that's fair enough. And you could almost say the same thing about The Inmost Light with, Michael Kiske. It's Halloween.
Absolutely, but I have to say, Michael Kiske is a very, very good friend of mine. And also, Without him, credit where credit is due, I think I would not have done Avantasia. Certainly, it would not have become as big as it became, because I was a fanboy and I wanted to have Michael Kiske sing heavy metal again in 99. Mm-hmm. And he didn't do that, much to my disappointment, So I got in touch and said, hey, I'm working on this metal opera. Would you want to be part of it? And he was hesitant at first, but then he agreed on doing it. That was 99 for the first album. But then he did it, and he got back to me. And I remember the first reaction we had after he had heard the material back in 99. He went, it's not so difficult for me to sing. I have a feeling I have sung those songs before anyway. It was clear and obvious that this music, the music I write when it becomes fast and heavy and anthemic, that has been inspired by Kai Hansen and Vaiki and Großkopf and Michi Kiske. I'm a huge fan of the early Halloween, Keeper era Halloween, and I think this music, their songwriting, and those songs like Eagle Fly Free, Future World, and Keeper of the Seven Keys, and Halloween, all those songs, they are in my DNA because I've listened to that stuff so much. So it's obvious when I write a fast song and I have Michael Kiske in the back of my head, it's absolutely obvious it's got to be in the Halloween direction. Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
And I will never deny that, because I don't think I've ever got into this business to change the world or to leave a big mark on the music world by establishing a style that had not been created before or whatever. No, it's sheer hedonism. I just want to write the music I enjoy. And I enjoy writing a Halloween ripoff song every now and then. And therefore, that's the music I grew up with, or part of the music I grew up with. Absolutely, I won't deny my Halloween roots.
No, that makes sense. And how did you approach the last song on the album, Arabesque, which is 10-minute epic?
That was a song that was left from the Moonglow sessions, previous album.
Right.
Not the recording of it, but the music, the arrangement, and the songwriting itself. It was a song that was written for Moonglow, but we already had two epics that were over 10 minutes long. So I said, okay, let's skip that one and put it on the next record, whatever that's going to be. That was 2018. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a lyric for it later on and adjusted some slight little things, and it became this wonderful song off of the new record. And it works beautiful. It's really funny, because in the beginning, Sasha said, especially after we had done the midsection that has some Baroque feeling, Sasha, my co-producer and guitar player and very good friend, he said, Toby, you can't do that. This song is so weird. It's a mishmash. It's a mix of different styles. It's Oriental and it's Celtic and it's got bagpipes and Baroque music and Karl Orff chorus and Black Sabbath verse and Queen midsection. It doesn't make sense. And I said, Sasha, okay, maybe it doesn't make sense to you, but I love it. And if you take a look at an arabesque pattern on a wallpaper, on an old wallpaper, those arabesques, they are beautiful patterns that have a soothing and relaxing, character. Mm. But at the same time, if you look at it, they are woven together by threads that don't match at all. It's very individual little threads combined to one beautiful pattern. And that's what an arabesque is. And I thought, if we take this further, that's what the song is about as well. It's about my life, I have to say. Mm-hmm. It's approached like a journey, like a fantastic journey in the song, in the lyrics, but it's down underneath. It's about my life as well, and about the challenges that you have to go through in life when you're dealing with expectations and with duty and with the things that you have to do according to the way of the world and the concept that other people have of you. And it deals with the question, how much room is left for your own expectations towards you, for your own longing and desire and needs, and the combination of bringing all those external and internal expectations and duties and stuff together, the combination of it, and forming those individual threads that don't match and that are counterparts in a way, bring them all together to a harmonic, balanced, whole artwork. That's the challenge of life, and that's also an arabesque. So that's how the song came together, and I love it. I mean, Jorn, Michi, they did a great job. I did a great job, I think. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful song, and we gave the song... sometimes you have to challenge when you do a short song. You have to challenge, and I like that challenge, to throw things out that are not necessarily needed to make the song work. So you throw out different elements to keep it brief sometimes and not beat around the bush. For this song, we took all the time it needs, even though it doesn't play by the rules of the music industry of the 21st century. Mm. 2 minutes until the vocals start. Yeah, fine. But sometimes you need to do those things. And you need to let a song breathe to unfold its magic. And I love that song. I really love that song.
No, definitely. And speaking of like a journey, it reminds me, like, some of the harmonies in there remind me of like 70s stuff like Journey. And I guess REO Speedwagon and Heart, things like that.
Absolutely, especially the section after the second chorus, when it's layered vocals, when you have that choir, and in the back it goes, oh, 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 oh. That's very, very, very 70s REO Speedwagon and Journey, I don't recall the name now. What is
uh-huh.
What's the name? My brain works so bad. What's the name of the band that did The Flame?
Oh, Cheap Trick. Cheap Trick, yeah.
Yeah, Cheap Trick, exactly. I love Cheap Trick. Okay, anyway, but that's the style. I'm influenced by that stuff, and I like... And the funny thing is, those vocals are all sung by myself. And that's also a result of the pandemic. Not that I couldn't afford a proper choir, but I enjoyed singing so much, and I was playing around with things in my studio, doing layered stuff, track by track, 80 tracks, 100 tracks, 120 tracks, track by track, singing the same stuff again in different ranges and in different registers and with harmonies, deleting stuff again, trying the same thing a little different or similar thing a little different. And the result is something like that choir that you hear in that song. That's all me. And it has this special sound. I don't know why, because when you have several singers, you get a broader frequency width.
Yep.
Now that's nerdy musician talk. But anyway, but when I do it by myself, it's got the same frequencies, and it gets a little more dense. But also it has this same crisp. I have a lot of high end in my voice. Sasha always says, oh, it's beautiful for every sound engineer because that's what you go for. I think it's sometimes too much high end, but it gives those choirs a certain feeling, which you can hear even on early records of Avantasia and some of the early Edgar records as well. There are certain passages that I've sung by myself, choirs. Mm. And I like it. I really... Sometimes I like my voice.
Excellent. And it brings me to Paper Plane. That was like an interesting song that's totally different to the rest of the album, I suppose. How did that come about?
I've always written those pop songs, I think. I grew up with mainly rock music and heavy metal. I mean, but like Dio and Maiden and Halloween and Kiss and AC/DC, but and Journey, Def Leppard, all this stuff. But I always liked a good a good pop song was always a good pop song to me. It was appealing. I always liked Aha, Take On Me, or Cutting Crew, I Just Died In Your Arms Tonight. And let's face it, some of the early Foreigner stuff, it's rock, it's pop. I mean, there's not really a way to draw a line in between. So, long story short, I had written that song and I knew it was a pop song right from the beginning, but it's so great in Avantasia that, I mean, I think what makes the albums work so beautifully, and also the shows, is that it's got valleys and mountains, valleys deep and mountains high. It's the spectrum of the music is so wide and so broad that there's a lot of diversity in Avantasia. And I've always enjoyed that. And Michael Kiske once said to me that he's always envious, because it was on one tour we did together where he was singing with Avantasia. He said, I can hardly think of a heavy metal band or a metal opera or a rock band or whatever that can play a song like Reach Out for the Light right next to a song like Lost in Space or Sleepwalking. He said, it's like usually you don't get away with it. And that makes Avantasia so exciting. You get away with all of it and your fans appreciate all of it. And I'm very thankful for that, because that diversity is what keeps me going. I mean, I've written 19 albums now. I'm happy that I can take a little leap to the left and a little leap to the right and do different things. And it was a pop song right from the start. I knew that Ronnie Atkins he's two singers in one body. He's the scream machine, and he's also a very, very good pop singer. And true. Very, very deep and melancholic. And I think it's a rock song in the chorus, absolutely. But I think it has its pop elements, and I love it. And some people always, of course, accuse me for, oh, you're becoming a pop musician, and that's pop. Yes. So what? I don't become a pop musician. I've always had pop songs. I mean, listen, one of the earliest Edgar records had a cover version of Ultravox. People should have been alarmed back then that I like pop music.
Well, speaking of being alarmed, the cover of Maniac on the previous album, I mean, that's great, but what was the decision for that one?
I just heard the song somewhere, and of course I had known it. Everybody knows that song. Everybody knew the movie, and so I thought, oh, that would be a great song to cover. And I said to Sasha, let's do a cover version of this. And Sasha said, oh, no, let's not do it. It's been done before. And I said, I don't care what's been done before. You know, I'm not Scott of the Antarctic. You know, I'm a musician. I want to have fun. It's hedonism. It's not about... I'm not an explorer, you know, I'm not an inventor. I want to have fun and enjoy myself. And 200 years from now, I don't give a fuck if anybody remembers my name for inventing something as stupid as a song or whatever. We did it, and it turned out it was a great song. And I thought, maybe that's not just a bonus track. I talked Sasha into doing Maniac back then. I said, oh, we will need it. Bonus track for Japan or something. And he said, okay, under that proviso, I can do it. Knowing that, I will do it. And that's always a very good trick to get Sasha into doing things he wouldn't do normally. So I still have a cover version of Don't Stop Believing. I don't know where it is. At some point, we will release it.
Excellent.
It's just so embarrassing to sing a song that Steve Perry has sung before. But anyway, that's the only thing. We will use that at some point. And I only got Sasha into doing that song with me because I said it's going to be a bonus track. Anyway, same with Maniac. But it turned out to be so great that I said, okay, now let's get a proper pop singer in there. Let's get Eric Martin to do it. No, Eric is a terrific singer. Mm. And it felt like a natural Avantasia song. And we put it on the record, much to... The not understanding of the record company. Oh, why do you put a cover song on this record? Yeah, because we can.
And I imagine that because you work with like Eric Martin and Jeff Tate, it gives them a chance to do something different as well.
Yeah, not so much for Jeff Tate, because let's face it, the songs he's singing with Amtasia are very close to what he did with Queensrÿche. That's because I've always been such a huge fan.
Fair enough.
Eric Martin, yeah, it's something different, especially on the new record, Rhyme or Reason. It's a power metal song, I would say, even though I never really understand the term power metal, but that's what they say. It's got double bass and it's anthemic and not so many Dungeons and Dragons and plastic swords, but it's considered power metal by some people. Anyway, it's not the kind of music that Eric Martin would normally sing. But he always complained about being the ballad boy in Avantasia and said, Toby, why don't you just let me sing a heavy track? And I remembered that. And I needed somebody for Rhyme and Reason off of the new record. I needed somebody to bring in a little looser feeling, because power metal, not a loser feeling, but a feeling that would be a little more loose. Difference here. So the song was very stiff and rigid and very typical European. Yes, eins, zwei, drei, vier. So I wanted somebody to loosen that up a little bit. And I needed somebody with a rhythm and blues feeling, a dancey feeling, a shuffle, black music feeling, whatever you call it, like Motown, a bit of Motown feeling. And I said, okay, Eric has this feeling and he's a member of the family, so I said, okay, Eric, now you got to step out of your comfort zone. We have a power metal track and I need you to loosen it up a little bit. And he did a terrific job. But for them both, it's, in a way, for Jeff and Eric, of course, as for everybody else in Amtasia, it's a way to step out of their usual working environment and not be the only front man in a band, but to come into this family. It's a different environment for all of us. Mm. And all of us enjoy it as that. All of us enjoy it as something you only do once every 2 or 3 years, getting on a plane and traveling around with some fellow egotists. Because usually everybody of us is the big star in our own bands.
Yeah.
And in Avantasia, it's just, you know, everybody has to share the spotlight with some other alpha males and females. And it's different in a way.
Mm.
But it works so well. It works so well. There's a lot of mutual respect. And Michi Kiska once said, what is so great about Avantasia is that nobody's asked to put his ego back or leave his ego at home. Everybody gets a space, a slot where it's required to unleash your ego and shine and be in the spotlight and be, the boss on stage. And that's everybody gets a spotlight and her spotlight. It's a good way. It's a healthy way to play with your ego.
No, indeed. And just very quickly, Flora Jensen, I presume she was brought into this a little bit reticent initially and not sure how to approach it. Is that right?
Excuse me, I didn't get the question.
How did Flora take doing the ballads? She did two songs.
Yep. It was great to have Flora. It was just, I wanted to have Flora on the record. I just brought it up, and Sasha, because I knew she was a great singer, and she had always been in, not in our close environment, but all we always moved in the same circles, because her early band, After Forever, produced with Sasha as well.
Okay.
And so they were always the same kind of environment. And I mentioned this to Sasha. We should ask Flora, and he said, oh, she's amazing in the studio. Long story short, we asked her. And I sent her the song Misplaced Among the Angels, which was also a song that had been written for the previous album without Flora in mind specifically. But I thought it would work great, and it turned out to work great. But at first, Flora was a bit hesitant. She said, oh, I can be part of Avantasia. That's not a problem. But that song in particular is not exactly my range. Don't you have anything else? I didn't, but I said, give me a few days. I'm going to write a song for you, or for a duet between the two of us. So I wrote Kill the Pain Away in a few days. And she loved that song. And she recorded it in her own studio. And once she got back to me, she said, okay, hey, Toby, by the way, I sung the other song as well. I checked it again. And to my surprise, it worked. So you have two songs now. And I listened to it and I said, oh, that's the understatement of the century. It didn't just work. It was exactly, sometimes things just fall in place. It was exactly what it should be. I cannot imagine anybody else singing the song like her, Misplaced Among the Angels. And so it was exactly what it needed. And she was given an understatement when she said, oh yeah, I think it works quite okay. I've sung the other one too. Yeah, she's very modest and humble. And she's an amazing singer. Technically, her expression, absolutely fantastic. The best thing that could have happened to Nightwish. Absolutely.
Excellent.
Okay. Even though they always had great singers. Don't want to badmouth Taya and the Swedish lady.
Oh, Annette Olsson.
Annette Olsson, exactly. They all did a great job, but Floor is the best of both worlds on an absolute top level.
Yeah, certainly. I'm just pretty much wrapping up, but one of my friends described Avantasia as a prog metal version of Alan Parsons Project.
A prog metal version of Alan. Isn't Alan Parsons Project a prog metal version of Alan Parsons Project already?
I know.
I don't know if the more progressive, in the purest sense of the word progressive, means like you're doing things that have never been done. I think I can get credit for being the first to have used the term metal opera, which is astounding to me, to myself, because I mean it was so obvious that after rock opera and space opera and pop opera and punk rock opera, somebody had to do a metal opera. And I was the first to come up with that term. How stupid is that? Nobody thought of this before. But that was the only thing progressive I did. The rest is based on nostalgia and yesterday and bringing, you know, my favorite singers on stage that have been around for 30, 40 years. But I get what you mean. We have those elements. I would say we're the raw and rough and dirty version of Trans-Siberian Orchestra with less confetti and less bells and whistles and less pyros.
Understood.
More chaos magic.
Well, yeah, indeed. Look, just final question for you. You obviously get a lot of guests in for your project, but what's a highlight for you guesting on other albums, be it, you know, for Rob Rock or Arian or whoever?
A highlight for me on other people's albums.
Yeah.
You're just referring to rock opera or to
just in your career. Across the board, really.
My favorite record, I mean, it's probably my favorite. You know, I could mention a couple of them, but I really, really, really like Holy Diver. That's, to me, it's like that's a record where every single song, 9 minutes of nine songs of sheer perfection. But you know, I could mention some Kiss records. I could mention some AC/DC. The live album, the first live album of AC/DC. I just talked to a friend of mine yesterday about this album. I get goosebumps just thinking of it. If You Want Blood, You've Got It. I know it's a live album, it's a compilation, but that's the most intense piece of music. It's the most powerful piece of music ever recorded, including any black metal, thrash metal, all these Cookie Monster vocal bands. It's like a heavy-wise or heaviness-wise, it's a fart compared to what AC/DC delivered on that record. That's just power to the point. That's what a Marshall amp should be doing. I adore AC/DC with Bon Scott. Yes. The heaviest music ever recorded. And I'm not just saying this because I'm talking to an Australian, you know? Most of them have been born in Scotland, or England currently. So I'm not saying this to brown nose.
No.
But that's the band.
It's amazing if you think about it, because that was like 1978, and you know, they were kind of just finding their feet, like working their ass off in, you know, France and UK and everything.
You're like 1978, you just said it. Imagine that. And put on a record like Power Age Today.
Yep.
It's state of the art. Like Power Age, that was, I think, 77 or 78. It's state of the art. Nearly 50 years, 45 years later, state of the art still.
Mm.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And it's that power. I mean, you know, they deserve so much more success. They could be the biggest band in the world.
You know, the funny thing about, like, their early albums, this is going back, like, you're starting me off now, but, you know, when they had the High Voltage and TNT and all that, once they released those locally as in Australia, then when they went to the UK and they did compilation albums. So if you're really a collector, you've got to get the Australian versions.
I have them. That's what I bought on the first tour in Australia.
Oh, good.
with a love song, the ballad. I think it was High Voltage or somewhere. Was it High Voltage or was it TNT? The ballad that is not. It was not available in Europe. It wasn't on the record.
Mm.
I get why when I listen to it now, but I love it. Oh, Gene. Scott was God, and Bon Scott was such an underrated songwriter.
Mm.
Lyrically, some balls are held for charity and some for fancy dress, but when they're held for pleasure, they're the balls that I like best. I mean, that line, that's so much more poetry than all that dragon, dwarf, and rescue the queen from the evil king kind of stuff.
Yep.
No, Bon Scott was the poet.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, it's just even songs like Problem Child, which is on, I think, oh God, which one is it?
It's in Dirty Deeds?
Yeah, Dirty Deeds in Europe? It's on Dirty Deeds, and then it got re-released on like the 74 or something in the States, which is just down the track. Problem Child's awesome song. And there was also Cold Hearted Man, which was like a bonus track for a release they put out in 83 when they put out the Bon era stuff. But being Australian, yes, I have these. Sorry.
I love that band, and I mean, Brian Johnson is the best thing that could have happened. I give even credit to Axl Rose for stepping in and keeping his ego out of the band completely and being a very, very gentle stand-in for Brian Johnson. I mean, Axl Rose did a great job doing that. But to me, the Bon Scott era, Brian Johnson is a killer singer as well. The stuff he did in Geordie when he was singing with his chest voice.
Mm.
Amazing. Of course, now he's more singing falsetto, but yeah. But those Bon Scott, those early eras when they were really playing riffs, that's I get goosebumps just talking about it.
Yeah, like Riff Raff.
So
Powerage is an awesome album. It's probably the best, I reckon. But there you go.
Yeah. What is the song? Down Payment Blues.
Yep.
Amazing. I love it. I love it. It was my first favorite band. I was 4 years old, and I found a tape of my brother, who was not into AC/DC. He just had one tape, and it was taped from it was recorded from a vinyl of his cousin. So who should be my cousin as well then, now, if I think about it. I was 4 years old, and it was the live album, If You Want Blood, and on the other side, it was Back in Black.
Nice.
And I heard that record, that tape, and I listened to it over and over again at age four. That's when I became an AC/DC fan. And it was not, I was influenced by my brother, because he didn't like that music. He didn't listen to it. He just had that tape. Nobody I knew listened to that music. Nobody in my class, certainly not my parents. It was a spiritual love affair. I identified with music, and I think subconsciously, that's when my plan shaped to become a musician. At age 6, 7, 8, 9, I didn't know anybody else who liked that kind of music. I didn't know they were not on the news. I didn't buy any metal magazines. I had it from this tape. That's what I had. And then I think I was 10 or 11 years old when I got into Highway to Hell. And then I bought the other records. And For Those About to Rock. And I was the only one I knew who loved that kind of music. And I made plans to be a musician one day. And in 1992, I was 14. I started Ed Guy, and the first song we did was Highway to Hell because I wanted to do that song. I wanted to be AC/DC too, and that's how it all came together. So AC/DC and Kiss were my first favorite bands, but now, you know, we completely got away from what we were
sorry
doing.
Well, I better let you go. This is for Loud Online, so I'll type it up and all the rest of it, but just for a treat, go and check out Countdown episodes. There was a show in Australia called Countdown when AC/DC appeared on it, and they did Baby Please Don't Go, and it's Bon Scott and the whole band in girl school uniforms.
I remember, and Bon Scott has even got the ponytails, but yep. he's dressed like a girl, right?
Yeah.
I've seen that.
Excellent. Glad I could help. Cultural awareness. Thank you.
Yeah, it's our duty. This world is bad. We got to make it a little better, and our duty is to rescue it from shit music, and we're working on it here.
Indeed. All right, look, thank you, Toby. I'll let you go. See you later.
Thank you very much, and have a lovely day. Thanks for this nice conversation.
All right, bye.
Bye.